Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Ghost reporting for duty here on a Monday morning. Excited to talk to you for the next hour or so as we discuss the latest in mixed martial arts. And how can the latest not be that amazing performance by John Jones at UFC 285? Historical performance. We're going to get all the way into it. There's so many angles to cover with this baddest man on the planet. Pound for pound, number one, greatest of all time, Mount Rushmore, greatest heavyweight of all time. We're going to get into all of it. And then Alexa Grasso, she didn't make it easy. We got to now discuss everything going on at flyweight, which is one of the most exciting divisions in all of mixed martial arts. Of course, we'll unpack the rest of the card as well, especially the big ones, the big stories that came out of it. It was definitely a huge, huge show for the UFC. And I want to thank you all as well for tuning in to our watch along this past Saturday. And might as well tell you that the next one, UFC 286, right around the corner, March 18th, the trilogy bout between Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman at the top of that bill. So count on that one. We'll be doing that one as well. All right, Ghost. Well, I don't know what other way to put it other than there is a big old pie on my face because I said Ciryl Gane was going to win and I thought he was going to smash John Jones. I hate doing this because I'm not a big fan of when fighters say, I don't like to make excuses, and then they give us excuses. But I feel like I have to at least say this. Because I said this. Unless, of course, John Jones comes in with the wrestling heavy attack, nullifying Ciryl Gane's biggest weapons. Yeah, sure. Of course, we could see, you know, a whole different fight. And that's exactly what took place. As soon as John Jones got him down, I remember going, he's in a world of hurt. Because I've seen John Jones mounted in that position where he can attack the neck or just start to beat you up. And I knew Ciryl wasn't strong there. It's exactly what took place and what have you. But I think that's unfair to John because it's not like John A has never done it. And that he's not formidable in it. You know, it's just that he just hasn't done it lately, but that doesn't mean that because you haven't done it, you're not going to do it again. Every fight's different. And absolutely just embarrassed Ciryl Gane. I can't imagine what it feels like to be Ciryl Gane right now. Hopping on that long flight back to Paris. I mean, you have a shot to do something against the GOAT off a 3-year layoff and that's what you come up with. I've rewatched it many times and he didn't do anything that was like careless. He threw a strike, he overextended
it. He was
capitalized on it, and then John Jones just kind of went to work, and John Jones is a beast in that position. But no one remembers all that. All you remember is 2 minutes, one round one, you know, and that's it.
I think obviously he's upset, but I think he probably felt foolish more than anything. I do feel like he did something like I thought patience was the name of the game in this one. You know, like really don't give John Jones anything. Let him work for everything. Hardly even throw any kicks early on. Like don't give him any reason to take you down. And he just didn't really do that. But you're right. Like, you have to give John Jones his props. There's no way around it. That dude went out there and overcame so many things. We gave so many reasons why he shouldn't win that fight. And he just overcame them all and came in and smashed this dude. You know, he made him look really foolish. And that's not Ciryl Gane. Ciryl Gane is a quality heavyweight. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there's just no way around it. We got to eat our crow.
Yeah. And, you know, like I say, John's timing was awesome. It reminded me of GSP, except GSP would obviously dump you in all in one act, which I guess kind of John did. But, you know, a lot of it had to do with just gravity, and then John also being a big guy and being able to, you know, to drag down Ciryl Gane and put him down, stay on top of him, you know, not let him even probably go through any form of steps. You know, I think of Alexa Grasso and her getting her arm trapped in the crucifix position, but her having the wherewithal to sneak that arm out, and that happened on a couple of occasions. So she stayed a little bit more, how can I put it to you? I mean, she had the benefit of a round one going in her favor, of her putting some doubt into Valentina's head by hurting Valentina with her hands before Valentina came storming back and winning rounds two and three. This one happened all so quick that I think Ciryl Gane was like, whoa, you know, like, I mean, you know, nothing unfolded. I mean, As much praise as I want to heap on John Jones, because what he did was amazing. He erased all doubt as far as who the GOAT of mixed martial arts is and all that stuff that belongs to him. There's still going to be some other questions that come along. You know, Dana White said he's probably the greatest heavyweight of all time. No, he's not. This is his second match at heavyweight. Like, how can he be the greatest heavyweight of all time? This is his second match. He beat a guy, you know, that one other person has beaten, who actually became champion as well, had one title defense. It was Ciryl Gane. But before that, I mean, he thumped a lot of heavyweights too. So we have yet to really get to that part. I mean, and maybe John will prove it. Getting past Stipe Miocic would be amazing. This is a guy that Ngannou is 1-1 against. But somewhere along the line, what Ciryl Gane did and what Stipe Miocic did and what a bunch of others did, well, maybe the early UFC guys didn't, and I'll get to that in a second. But you beat the baddest man on the planet to get that coronation, you know, to get the belt and to get that label. You had to basically beat the incumbent. And Kane did it to Brock Lesnar. Brock did it to Randy Couture. You know, and so on. For Fabricio, you know, he took out Cain Velasquez. Stipe took out Fabricio Werdum. Ngannou took out Stipe Miocic. But right now, Jones took out Ciryl Gane, not Francis Ngannou. Now, what I was going to say was early on, we had these arguments because Tim Sylvia, Andre Arlovski, Frank Mir, whoever was at the top of the UFC, they weren't really regarded the baddest man on the planet because they hadn't beaten Fedor Emelianenko. And you know, we couldn't do that, which is kind of what we're at right now. We can't do that. But is Jones the greatest MMA fighter of all time? Yes. Is he the pound for pound number one? Depending on your criteria, yes. Either him or Volkanovski. Is John Jones the on Mount Rushmore? I would find it hard to leave him out. I mean, if we're arguing that he's the greatest of all time, why was he not on fucking Mount Rushmore, right? Unless your Mount Rushmore criteria states can never have been in any form of trouble with the law or whatever. Is he the baddest man on the planet? I can't give him that one. Just because he beat Ciryl Gane and he beat him worse than Francis Ngannou, it doesn't mean he's the baddest man on the planet, because the baddest man on the planet was Francis Ngannou. And John Jones didn't beat him. And as we all know, styles make fights. I can't give him that one. Is he the greatest heavyweight of all time? No, I can't even give that to Francis Ngannou. I think I still have to give it to Stipe Miocic or Fedor Emelianenko. Is he the greatest heavyweight champion of all time? No, again, Miocic or Francis Ngannou. What's the difference between heavyweight champ and heavyweight? Well, there's an argument that Alexander Volkanovski is the greatest featherweight of all time. But is he the greatest featherweight champion of all time? He's only got 5 title defenses, whereas Jose Aldo had 7. So that's where I've, you know, my colleagues have brought that up. And I think that's been pretty good. It's definitely been food for thought. Definitely a conversation one can have. So can John Jones get there? Sure. Yeah. I mean, beating Miocic will be nice. a nice skin to have on your wall, but I still think it all comes back to him and Francis have to fight at some point if we want to anoint him with all those titles. And plus, who just doesn't want to see that badass of a fight?
I think Dana must have misspoke when he must have meant something else, because he'd have to be a whack job to really to say that and actually believe it with one fight. You can't do that. And you're right. Like, it's even hard to do that with Francis Ngannou. So I think he must have misspoke. But look, there are a lot of question marks surrounding John Jones still. But there are a lot of things that were somewhat solved. The way he would, can he get through a fight week, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It appears he can now. what's he going to look like physically? He didn't look that much more like, excuse me, sorry. If you didn't know John Jones was coming from light heavyweight, if this was your first UFC event, you wouldn't go, hey, wait a minute, what's that guy doing there? Like, he looked like a heavyweight. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things were solved, but a lot of things are still open to interpretation. And the weird thing is, like, you can always, when you're talking about these guys like John Jones, like Anderson Silva, GSP, they're going to be subject to so much scrutiny. And let's be honest, say Stipe's next. He fights Stipe and he wins. Man, I mean, people are probably going to say, well, that's an older Stipe. Stipe had a layoff too, right? There's mm-hmm. always going to be something. But at the end of the day, you just can't argue with his overall body of work. Body of work. But not if you're just talking heavyweight, it's not enough.
Yeah. He, hang on a second. Okay. Yeah, Miocic is almost 40 years old, and, you know, it's not going to be the best Miocic we've ever seen. Although the best Miocic we ever seen might have been the one that won those last two fights against Daniel Cormier, which was like 37, 38, so just a couple years away. Getting blasted by Francis Ngannou, no shame in that, especially because he also owns a win over at Francis Ngannou. But I think if he wants those other accolades coming to him, as far as heavyweight's concerned, he's got to get through Miocic and Ngannou, and probably maybe even one person after that, a Pavlovich or an Aspinall or whoever else. I don't know. Probably Curtis Blaydes, too, would be another one I'd like to see him. Then he's answering all kinds of questions. But he doesn't have to, because to be the greatest of all time doesn't mean you have to be the greatest heavyweight of all time. It just helps that you won another title in another weight class. It's not like GSP proved to us he was the greatest middleweight of all time. You know, he just won the middleweight title. He went 1-0, and that was it. But, yeah, John, you know, by handling business so easily, so clinically, he still leaves question marks out there. How will he do in rounds 4 and 5 carrying around that extra body? How can he take a hit from a proper heavyweight? You know, like, we just don't know. And that's not John's fault. He went out there and did things so quick that he can say, I can already turn it around and tell you I'll be fighting in early July. And that's awesome. You know, there's not like, I'll have to see how my legs feel or anything like that. He did claim to have one injury out there. It was an injury that didn't keep him out of this fight. So I doubt it would keep him out of the Miocic fight. But he did say there was an injury lingering out there and he wasn't able to fully spar. He did tape up his foot and they made him take some of it off. But he says he will not fight without tape on his toes. He's always fought with tape on his toes. Okay. But you know, I don't, whatever. And I was glad, you know, at the end of our watch along, I kind of felt bad. I didn't want to be a guy that piles on, because so far John Jones had a good week. And I remember saying, hey, look, congrats, you won, but please go to your after party and then get back to your room and then get the hell out of town. Don't revert back to that John Jones that just everyone hates, you know, the one that steps outside of his marriage and is in the law, and well, not even marriage, fiance, or hurts people, innocents, you know, loved ones, and it's repeated, you know. And because you know, do we all have faults? Of course. Have we all made mistakes? Of course. But over and over and over, no, man. And then when you come back preaching that it's not going to happen again, or I found God, you know, it's just that he's a public figure. He's going to get that. You know, if it happened to me or you and one of us did any of those, you know, I don't think people would care because they probably wouldn't find out about it. And if they did, you know, okay, well, whatever. They judge us and move on. But this guy, his fans love him. You know, no matter what, man, his fans are some of the most passionate ones out there. And I know there's the McGregor ones goes and other fighters that have fans, but I mean, his fans are like, fuck yeah, John Jones, what's up? Like they yell at you, man, at these press conferences. They're just so forgiving of him for whatever he's done, and I find it remarkable.
Yeah, he does have passionate fans, man. But you know what though? Maybe he did lose some, because if you watched Embedded, he did this one appearance where, I mean, there was a decent amount of people there, but there should have been a lot more people there. I think he won some people back again this time around for this fight. But I don't know. Like, you know, if I were advising John Jones right now, he can't be upset. Like, if he's listening to this show, he can't think we're being harsh, right? He's done this to himself. Now he's got to accept the criticism when it comes. Or people not being sure if he's being authentic. Like, that's just something, you reap what you sow. You got to live with that going forward. If I'm John Jones right now, man, I probably obviously stay out of trouble. Get back in there and look, past Stipe Miocic, there's nothing too sexy other than Francis Ngannou. But what I will say is this, and full disclosure, we've already done spinning back click. We usually do it the other way around. And I think, George, you talked about this. You're not going to make money if you don't fight, right? Keep fighting, because really he has the opportunity to do something pretty damn amazing. When you look at the history books, records are meant to be broken. That happens in every sport. But I don't know that people can touch what he's doing right now. And if he just keeps adding on to what he already accomplished in heavyweight division, and that's capturing a belt. But if he can keep adding on title defenses, and then you add that to what he did at light heavyweight, like, it's going to take some kind of machine to come out of nowhere and break a record like that. I would do something like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like Habib, as great as he was, we just needed a little bit more. Because when you look at the stats and all that, eventually it might get passed. I think John Jones, if he beats Miocic, here we go again. If he beats Miocic, and I don't know if Ngannou, if it comes back, like if he does that, then you might not even meet that much. But yeah, guys like Pavlovich, guys like Aspinall, if he just keeps mounting those up, that's going to be untouchable for years.
I want to see him fight Blades. I really want to see him fight another wrestler. And just see how he does. But I also realize that people that listen are probably saying, you just want to see him lose. here's why I say that, because he could probably take Aspinall down and submit him as fast as he did Gone. Thereby, we wouldn't know. You know, we still wouldn't have answers towards, like, do you have knockout power? Can you take a punch from anyone else? But if he's winning, it's just really not necessarily, because, like you said, the resume is amazing. One thing that I didn't finish saying, and I kind of veered off, was at the end of the watch along, I kept saying, John, please just get home. Just don't fuck this all up. You break our hearts when you do it, as people that are proud to be on covering the sport and the growth of the sport. And yet, you know, it's what you and others do from time to time that just gives us this black eye. And I was glad to hear Dana even joke about it. He said that he told Hunter Campbell, book this guy a chartered flight home and get him the hell out of here. Because, you know, it's so true. Like, that, you know, he's thinking, I guess, how I'm thinking, how you're thinking. Like, this is more than – John Jones is more than just the game. You know, he's a big, big mythical figure in our sport. Anyway, he won fair and square. He looked awesome. like I say, I think a lot of that praise is well deserved. And for those that still resist on a few things, I'm with you, man. I don't know if he's the baddest man on the planet. I think you have to go through Francis Ngannou for that. Now, Francis Ngannou had been gone for a few years, and he just doesn't want to seem to come back, even though he's healthy, then sure, you know, Francis, I kind of wish from Francis, sometimes I think he's a little too tricky with his words. You know, Mike Bond asked him, well, he asked him about financial, and then Francis wanted him to clarify. You know, this whole thing with the freedom thing, like, you probably signed a couple contracts with the UFC, so your freedom didn't mean that much to you then. I still believe it's just the freedom to make a big old bag in boxing, you know, and once you make it, will you come back? Because we don't think you're going to win there, but at least if you made money, that'll help you so that, you know, your next couple generations of your family don't have to ever have to worry about anything, then cool. Who can hate on that, you know? But I still think Francis probably just wants a big payday. Hopefully he's competitive in that boxing match. Imagine if he pulls off the miracle of winning. But if he doesn't, I think he'll come back, and he has to come back to the UFC. I just, you know, it's that Jones fight. It needs to happen. Otherwise, we're going to lose out on Fedor versus Randy, Fedor versus Brock, GSP versus Anderson, you know, part three of McGregor versus Diaz. I don't want to lose any more of those fights. It's they're very, very makeable, and this one has to be done. And I think the UFC would benefit a lot from Francis Ngannou also leading the charge into Africa too. No disrespect to Tricus Duplessis.
Yeah, that was interesting. I think he has to come back eventually. There's too much money on the line for the UFC. It'd be stupid not to do it. And the flip side of it is too, like, if you're the baddest man on the planet, you have to want it too. Like, you should be upset that a guy like John Jones is doing what he's doing. There should be something inside of you that says, I want to go shut that guy up.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually that's going to flip, right? If he beats Miocic, then we're going to start having that talk too. Like, well, you should want to come over here and beat this guy. So there's going to be a lot of pressure going forward on all of them. All parties, John Jones, UFC, Francis Ngannou. But I think it would be absolutely ridiculous if they did not make that matchup.
Yeah, that's why I hope in boxing, whatever it is, it's not as quick as Jones versus Gon. I hope even if they have to do something like Floyd, which is, you know, carry the fight a little bit, and they decided in the 10th round, okay. You know, I think a lot of us said, all right, well, McGregor went 10 rounds with Mayweather and he won the first four or whatever. But I'd like to see something like that for Ngannou, and then for him to come back and just, you know, fight the fighters that are that await him. Because I just think that Ngannou's everything I ever pictured when thinking about the baddest man on the planet years ago, what he would look like, or what he would, how you would compete. I this is going to sound silly, but when Thunderlip jacked up Rocky Balboa, I actually thought, man, that's kind of what I thought, you know, like what would happen if these two were to meet. Like, Hogan needs to play with this guy, otherwise this guy has no shot, you know. But yet boxers were the ones that made big paydays back in the day, but I knew that a wrestler could really, really have his way with it. And then luckily the UFC came along and we started seeing all the other disciplines, and then we got mixed martial arts and or whatever. But when we have an opportunity to have that type of clarity, it needs to happen. We have to have Jones versus Ngannou in a stadium, no less.
Rocky represented boxing and BKFC in that fight. Because remember, at one point he cuts the gloves off and he comes back no gloves.
Yeah. That's true. So he's going to fight Miocic on International Fight Week. That looks pretty likely, right? We can say it that way, and if it doesn't happen, no one will hold it against us. But it looks like Miocic told Megan O'Leary he can be ready by then. John Jones says, I didn't take any damage. Dana hasn't filled that yet with another fight. You know, they're talking about May and the May card, and traditionally they have something in June, so I expect something in June. But if not, this would be one heck of a way to promote International Fight Week.
It's all too perfect, George. Something about this scares me. I want it to happen, but these are two guys that are difficult to deal with. It's really not that far away. It is the perfect scenario, and the UFC's got to do everything in their power to make it happen. But I think when two fighters know that they're kind of both the A side to the UFC here, they need this matchup. I think they're going to make it difficult. I don't know, man. I really do hope it happens, though.
What about Grasso and Shevchenko? We have a new champion in the women's flyweight division, Alexa Grasso, excuse me. And, you know, the way she won the fight was simply amazing. I have to give her a ton of credit. Plus, she survived the ground game. She didn't look good. You know, there was a closed guard for a lot more time than I'm comfortable with. But I guess if it allowed her to neutralize Shevchenko or at least stop her from beating her up, maybe mission accomplished. But she was losing rounds. And she was probably going to lose round four before Valentina did the spinning back kick that missed. Grasso was there and immediately took her back all in one motion, a thing of beauty. When has that ever been part of Grasso's game? Not really. We haven't really known her to have that type of an attack, you know. But she got it done. God bless her. And now I think you got to run the rematch back immediately.
I'm going to agree and disagree with Valentina Shevchenko. I don't know that you could say she was dominating the fight. I thought she lost round one.
She did.
And there were things that happened in the fight that impressed me that Grasso did. One was getting out of that crucifix, and the other was towards the end of round two, I think, or something, Valentina went for that throw that she gets a lot of fighters with. Alexa countered it. I thought that was really good. So she had her moments. It's just that when she was flat on her back, she didn't really have too much of an answer. Now, what she did, it's kind of like what Chuck Liddell would do. She just got up. She wouldn't stop trying to get up. And I like that because a lot of fighters would have caved in a situation like that. We've seen a lot of fighters cave. Alexa did that. So now if we talk rematch, which absolutely has to happen, now you're looking at a girl who can say, I stood toe-to-toe with Valentina Shevchenko, and I was fine. Right? You look at her face, it wasn't that banged up. She landed a lot on Valentina. Now all she has to do is focus on that wrestling, right? Just don't get taken down so easily. And we've seen fighters make that jump. Look at Francis Ngannou when he fought Stipe Miocic the first time, and then look at the second time, right? So with a little good defensive wrestling, which, by the way, she went for a takedown too, I think, towards the end.
She did.
But with some defensive wrestling and good fight IQ, that fight is a lot closer than we think. And Dan Tom made a good point too on Spinning Back Click today. Valentina's age may not be that high, but the wear and tear of Muay Thai and MMA is a lot. And so I think it's a little bit of maybe a small amount of slowing down, but it's also the division getting so much better. So I am in for that fight. I hope it happens in Mexico. I think that's big. I think the country deserves it. They got three champions right now. You got to make something happen over there.
Valentina kind of resorted to her days of countering where she lets the opponent dictate the game. And along the way, she ate some punches from Grasso that got her attention, kind of made her more into a wrestler than a boxer. But Valentina needs to realize she has heavy hands, great kicks. She did get it going at times, but I don't think she ever got Grasso's respect. Did Grasso ever look like she was scared of Valentina striking? To me, not really too much. She didn't taste too much of it. She had a lot of concerns with Valentina's wrestling and ground and pound. But, hey, look, man, to the victor goes the spoils. We must talk about Grasso and what she was able to do. She was a huge underdog, one of the biggest underdogs ever, and she cashed, man, like plus 500, plus 600 for a lot of people against Shevchenko, who was minus 800, minus 1,000. And the odds on the second fight are Shevchenko minus 180, Grasso plus 150. So still a lot of people saying, well, we know what we saw, and if Valentina maybe doesn't make this mistake, you know, this or that might happen. This doesn't have the feeling of Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena. This has, and in that fight, Amanda Nunes didn't show us shit, whereas Valentina did show us that she could kick Grasso's ass. But yeah, what happened? We all still said, well, we don't think the real Nunes showed up. And then when the real Nunes did show up, she blasted Pena. You know, this one has a different feel. The real Valentina did show up, was beating up Alexa towards the end, and then got caught. So this fight is really compelling to me.
Yeah. I don't know, dude. I think, could it headline a card, or does it have to co-main?
Well, if Brandon Moreno's on the card, Alexa Grasso's the co-main. If... Oh, I just triggered Alexa. If Yair Rodriguez is on the card, then I don't see, even though he's a heavier weight class, I think having a fight that's, well, no, I guess he would be unifying versus Alexander Volkanovski. So Volkanovski would be the main event against Yair, and then Alexa Grasso would be the co-main event because of the they usually go by weight 99% of the time. The one opportunity is if Volkanovski gets booked against Makhachev again for whatever reason, and they allow Yair to have an interim title fight defense, which they allowed Barrow to do it, then I could see her undisputed title having more weight than Yair's interim title.
I think they could absolutely fill up a stadium over there. If you take two of those three, because obviously they wouldn't want to do all three. You take two of those three and then sprinkle in some other fighters, I think they could sell out a stadium out there, dude.
Maybe. I don't know about no 100,000 like Julio Cesar Chavez and Greg Haugen. I think you still have to, you have to get to that level. You know what I mean? And they're getting there, but I don't know that there's that much love for mixed martial arts over there. That's still a boxing country and a soccer country. I don't know that we're there yet with mixed martial arts. So maybe a smaller, like 45,000 seat stadium, like what they had in Curitiba, Brazil, maybe something like that. Maybe they have one of those in Guadalajara. I don't know.
From what I'm hearing, the people are going absolutely batshit over there off of Yair and now Alexa. Like, it's all over the news, dominating.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. They deserve it. And Mexico is the type of country I've always said, when Argentina won the World Cup and they went batshit crazy for the team, I thought, when will there be a greater celebration than this in the history of sports? I couldn't think of one. And then I thought, well, hold on a second. If Mexico were to finally win a World Cup, that would be tremendous, man. And Mexico has a big city in Mexico City where a lot of people would just go bonkers. You know, so yeah, they love their sports heroes, that's for sure. I think we all want to see an immediate rematch, and it sucks for Tyler Santos, Aaron Blanchfield, Manon Ferron, and a few others. You had said during the spinning back click, man, they should have like a Grand Prix, you know, like
that's UFC, what it's all about.
The UFC could, if they want to top Bellator, say we're going to give the winner $2 million. Or $5 million, or whoever, whatever it amounts to. I don't know, but that would be amazing.
That's when you do a Grand Prix, when you have so much talent that it just needs to unfold sooner than later. That's when you do a Grand Prix. And these are all, do you know that people would be fighting to get into this? When you go through the eight, look at the people that would be left out.
So you'd have to have Alexa. Oh, here we go. You have to have Grasso, Shevchenko, Blanchfield, Santos,
Ferron,
Manon Ferron. You have to have Jessica Andrade, Lauren Murphy,
Suarez,
Tatiana Suarez,
Casey O'Neill, undefeated.
Chukagian, Casey O'Neill,
Tracy Cortez.
Tracy Cortez is another one. I don't know if we can get to 16. So far, that's 11. Oh, Macy Barber.
You want to get to 16? Throw Misha Tate in there.
I saw her yesterday at NASCAR, and she doesn't want to. She wants to finish her career as a bantamweight. Now, could you talk her into it? Possibly. So we'll leave her as a wild card. But Barber's respected. Miranda Maverick is respected. Like that doesn't feel like a force. Like, you guys are just, you know, giving us a few fighters here just to get to 16. No, I don't think so. That's so far, that's 13 quality flyweights. Who am I missing here? Hold on a second.
I mean, didn't Rose Namajunas say she want to go up?
Yeah, but that kind of seems like I only want to have one of those, which is kind of like a force, you know? So either Misha's going to be a force because she just told me that she wants to finish as a bantamweight, or Rose is going to be a force because, I mean, Rose is 2-0 against the current champion. You know what I mean? In Zhang Wei Li. So I kind of find it dumb to want to go up when you own two wins over the current champ. Now, granted, when Rose maybe said it, I don't know. I'd have to go back. She was 0-2 against that current champ, which is Carla Esparza. So at that point in time, I could see, you know, her showing interest elsewhere. But right now, it's the other way around. But I have a list here of UFC flyweights, and this will make it easy. There's going to be a few names that jump out at us, and we can either get there or we can't. Maybe we have 12 and 4 get buys. I don't know. Or maybe we figure this thing out. Here we go. Give me a second.
Amanda Ribas.
Ribas?
Yeah.
She's a flyweight?
Isn't she?
She competed as a... Did she go back down? Oh, yeah. She did compete as a flyweight. I think you could pull that off. She's popular. What's her record at flyweight, though? Is she only 1-0, or has she been there for a while? Amanda Ribas is now... See... She made a flyweight debut against Paige VanZant, who's really a strawweight. She beat her. Then she returned to strawweight and lost to Marina Rodriguez. Then she beat Verna Jandiroba. And then she lost to Kaylin Chookagian. But now she beat Viviane Araújo. So as a flyweight, she's 2-1. Let's hold on to that in just a second. I have the flyweight roster here for women's MMA. And we have... Courtney Casey is 6-9. No, she'd probably get left out. Jillian Robertson's a respectable 8-5.
Yeah.
I'd feel comfortable with her. So Robertson. See, they have Cynthia Calvillo, but I think she's teased dropping back down. JJ Aldrich. Molly McCann. We can't leave her out, right?
Yeah.
She was just on a streak, and then she got checked by Blanchfield. So now how many we have? We have 8 on this side, and we have our 8. I included Ribas. I'm not going to include Sajara Eubanks. Oh, Jennifer Maia. Jennifer Maia was a contender at one point. She is 4-5 now. So I don't know about that. I don't think we can get Valentina's sister in there either.
No.
probably not Luana Carolina. But everyone else seems to be okay. So maybe, just maybe, goes she sneaks in there. I could see Rose bumping Amanda Ribas because she's Rose. You know what I mean? Yeah,
she could bump a lot.
If she doesn't, then maybe you could give Ribas that because she's popular. She's very likable. But, yeah, you could have a proper Grand Prix right here. 16. Didn't feel like any of them were a force either.
Now, imagine that dais, right? You have them all up there. Dude, that would be so legit.
Yeah. Jeez, who gets through all these? I still feel like the strongest play is probably either Shevchenko or Blanchfield. Crazy. All right. Here's the rest of the card from UFC 285. So we talked about the main event, John Jones, the new UFC heavyweight champ, Alexa Grasso, the new women's flyweight champ. Shavkat Rakhmonov defeated Jeff Neal. They fought at a catch weight at 175. It was such a great fight that Dana White said he's going to give Jeff Neal his bonus money because they decided that was the fight of the night. Usually when you miss weight, you're not eligible for a bonus. But he did. And he's going to bonus Jeff Neal. What I think he should have done was said, the rules state that if you don't make weight, you don't get a bonus. So Shavkat gets all 100 grand to him. And Jeff Neal loses out. Now, on the side, I can do whatever I want with my money or whatever, or with the company's money. I'm going to bonus Jeff Neal. But I still think Shavkat should get his 100 grand because he had to go against somebody who didn't make weight. And he should get all of those perks that come with it. 30%, all the bonus money if this falls in line. And he earned it, man. And he went for it at the very end. Still got the finish, maintaining his record of 17-0 with 17 finishes.
Yeah, it's kind of when you think about it, I guess a fighter could say, well, what the hell am I going out there and putting, you know, I could fight a boring fight if I want to. Why am I going to do that if I can't win the bonus? I get that. Then the UFC could probably turn around and say, well, how about you don't fight at all? But I'm happy that he did get a bonus because that was hell of a fight.
Me too. But I still don't think it should be one of these 50 grand that's eligible for other fighters. Because at that point, what I'd rather have is someone who had a great performance not get squeezed out and he or she get 50,000 rather than someone who missed weight and got it because they were one half of one hell of a fight. Because let's not forget, they were the half that lost too. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to cut an extra 4 pounds and you lost, but you did put on a great fight. I mean, the flip side could be, hey, you know what? I just ain't going to cut this weight. I'll give up my 30 grand. But if I give one hell of a fight, I might be eligible for that 50, which will offset the 30% like I gave away. You see what I'm saying? That's why I would have preferred he just clarify and say it all belongs to Shavkat. He gets 100 grand. Jeff didn't make weight. But because it was such a great fight, I'm going to take care of him. And that's that discretionary bonus that he sends the fighters. And then that way we don't have to hear it that way. But again, just to give us consistency. But am I happy? Of course. I'm always happy when fighters can make money. I just think do it right and don't create other problems for yourself. He wants to fight Colby Covington. And, of course, anytime you call Colby Covington's name, it's an exciting fight because Colby's awesome, man. Controversial, but he does put on a show. But as of right now, I still haven't heard anything with Colby Covington. So I get excited for about half a second, and then I'm like, well, we'll see.
Dana says he's agreed to a lot of different names, but it just hasn't panned out. But yeah, anytime Colby Covington, I love watching that guy fight.
Yeah, me too. Matias Gumrot defeated Jalen Turner. He goes to 22-2. He's won 5 of his last 6. Jalen Turner, Armand Sarukian, Carlos Diego Fajeda, Jeremy Stevens, Scott Holzman. So really, really good names for Matias Gumrot. But the Beneil Dariush one obviously set him back in terms of being a title challenger. The Dariush even has his own problems. He faces Charles Oliveira. But this Polish fighter, man, he's something else. I like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good fighter.
Mm-hmm. Rounding out the main card, we had Bo Nickel defeating Jamie Pickett. And another quick fight. There was a little bit of controversy because Bo Nickel kicked Pickett in the nuts. To me, it looked clear. The ref missed it, allowed the fight to continue. And that kind of led to the finish. Now, does that mean Bo Nickel couldn't have gotten Jamie Pickett couldn't have gotten 5 minutes? Bo Nickel 5 minutes. They restart. Bo Nickel gets a takedown and wins. No, it doesn't mean that at all. But that's not what happened. What happened was he kicked him in the nuts. The other guy's like, wait, what's going on here? And Bo Nickel capitalized. Now, is it Bo Nickel's fault? No, because the ref didn't say nothing. Now, at the end of the fight, Bo Nickel said, I kicked him in the leg, and I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I think that's one you just kind of give that coy smile and go, hey, man, my job's to fight. Talk to Keith Peterson.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, Bo Nickel's a great fighter. You can already tell. He's going to get better. And right now, he's just so good at one thing that he can give a lot of people problems. But, you know, his submission game's pretty nice, too. So, yeah, if you give Pickett the rest, I mean, who knows? It is MMA. But more than likely, I mean, look at the guy. He's 3-0. He's on the main card. You really think they're going to give him a guy that they think he's going to lose to? The writing's on the wall. But Bo Nickel will be a star, man, for sure.
He seems to kind of get a little carried away with himself, which I like, man. But hey, slow down a little bit, Bo Nickel. Like, you're, what is he now? 3-0, 4-0?
Well, now he's 4-0. But that's what we told Sean O'Malley, right? And look how much money Sean O'Malley's been making.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. But like, literally, all someone has to do is hit rewind on this show. And we go rewind and we're saying, wow, Shavkat Rakhmonov is now 4-0 just in the UFC. Mm-hmm. Wait, what is Shavkat? Shavkat in the UFC is 1, 2, 3, 5-0. So Shavkat's just 5-0 just in the UFC, 17-0 overall, and he's got like 9 submissions and 8 KOs. That's someone that can be talking about title shots and Colby Covington and possibly being a goat down the road or whatever. You're just 4-0. Like, relax a little bit, Bo Nickel, is all I'm saying. Relax.
Yeah.
The earlier fights on the prelims, Cody Garbrandt back in the win column, defeated Trevin Jones. Dricus du Plessis defeated Derek Brunson. Amanda Ribas defeated Viviane Araújo. Marc-André Barriault defeated Julian Marquez. Ian Gary defeated Song Kinan. Cameron Simon defeated Leomana Martinez. Tabitha Ritchie defeated Jessica Penne. Fareed Basharat defeated Damon Blackshear. Loic Radziwanov defeated Esteban Ribovic. So the 50 grand went as follows. There was actually three performers of the nights: John Jones, Alexa Grasso, and Bo Nickel. Fight of the night, Shavkat versus Neil. So $50,000 bonuses went out there. Now, could Richie have gotten an arm bar? Gotten 50 grand for her arm bar? There's an argument there. This had a $12 million gate. Fourth highest in UFC history. Why aren't all finishers getting bonus? Remember going back to last week?
Weird. I don't know.
Like, this is the gate to do it in. You could give it to him. You could give it to Mario for being, him and Marquez actually put on a great fight. You could give him 50 G's. Duplessis smashed. I mean, whether the towel was going in or not, he smashed Brunson at the end. You could give it to him.
Yeah.
It's the most baffling thing that's out there. Is he going to take care of them all? Sure, maybe. But is it 50? Is it 25? Is it 30? I don't know.
Consistency is all we're asking for.
Where is the consistency? Exactly. Duplessis, this guy's a character. He wants the UFC to go to Africa, and he feels like as a true African, he obviously wants to lead the charge. Okay, is what he's saying wrong? No, it's not. He's from South Africa, which is part of Africa. But Kamaru Usman, if I'm not mistaken, was born in Africa, but immigrated to the United States when he was young. And so he flies both flags, Nigeria and the United States. But he was born in Africa, so he's African. So is Israel Adesanya, who now lives in New Zealand. And so was Francis Ngannou, who was Cameroonian, then went to France, then lives in the United States. So I guess the only thing he can say is, hey, we're Africans living in Africa. Build the card around us. But it just sounds a little snarky a little bit. You know what I mean?
A little bit. I mean, Jesus. And look at the guys that you're kind of like not making an enemy out of, but kind of pointing out, like, do you really want beef with those people? Like, I probably would have kept my mouth shut.
Yeah, include them. Include them as part of your drive to get the UFC in Africa is all we're saying, right? Mm-hmm. But there's the headlines out there. He's being branded as a racist. Because Ngannou and Adesanya are fake Africans. Like, I don't know. Did those belts ever go to Africa? As far as I know, they came to America, New Zealand. I'm going to take a belt to Africa. I mean, Ngannou took his belt to Cameroon. Did it stay there? No, I mean, you know, he lives in Las Vegas, but it just sounds like, bro, you know, relax a little bit here.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to wake up every day in Africa for that to be the case. Overall, the card goes grade?
9.5.
Pretty fair. When it's historical and has things that go down like that, they tend to stand out, you know, like,
yeah.
I didn't think Valentino was going to lose. I knew Jones could win. I didn't think he was going to, but I knew he could win. Whereas I gave Grasso very, very little chance to win. Because I said if they stand for five rounds, sure, Grasso could win 3-2, three rounds to two. But Valentina made the proper adjustment. When the striking was formidable on Grasso's side, she said, well, you know what? I got this wrestling game, and then I'm going to go down. You know, and I also want to give Grasso props because someone who came up through the boxing family lineage that she has, you know, learned enough jiu-jitsu that she was able to strangle a well-rounded fighter like Valentina Shevchenko, and she did it by cranking and putting pressure on the face, not necessarily going under the chin and choking.
Yeah, when she released it, like you could just see the mark on Valentina, like the color just completely got zapped from her.
For sure. Yeah, all right. This weekend we have Dvalishvili, and he's going to be fighting...
Oh, did you freeze?
No. Oh, Peter Yan. Peter Yan, that's right. I was like Sanhagen and Vera for some reason. I was like, wait a minute, what's going on again? I had to pause. And this is an interesting fight because these are top bantamweights. But it's complicated because Yan is 0-2 against the current champ. And Dvalishvili is besties with the champ. So what does the winner get here? And to top it all off, the champ's got a fight booked against Henry Cejudo. I would almost not blame Dvalishvili for at night when he's saying his prayers to say, you know, if Aljo were to lose, I wouldn't necessarily shed a tear. That way he has an opening towards fighting Cejudo.
Mm-hmm. Business as usual.
He seems to be pretty loyal, you know.
You got to look at it as business as usual because that division is so stacked that even if Henry Cejudo turns around and wins the title, I don't know that he can hold on to it. I don't know that anybody can hold on to it. There's just too much talent.
Yeah. And I guess Ryan Spann and Nikita Krylov were rebooked. So that adds to this weekend's card. You got to check it out, folks. We also have a Bellator card, so keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. We cover the sport better than any other website out there, any other publication out there. So we're your ticket. And this is the MMA Junkie Radio Show, Mondays and Thursdays, dropping here on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Omni. And don't forget to catch Goes and I every Monday, Spinning Back Click, live, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, over at youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. Subscribe and ring that little bell. That way you're notified of when we go live. For now, we're out of here. Thanks again for tuning in to the Watch Along. And don't forget about the next Watch Along, already booked, already set for March 18th for UFC 286. Go out and be a champion.